Good evening. Welcome to the Salieri Report. Today is July 9th, 2015. I'm Catherine Austin Fitz, and I'm delighted you could join me this evening. I hope you had a great July 4th weekend if you're in the United States, and you just got some peace and some rest. Today is the wrap-up, the second quarter wrap-up, and I usually don't do a separate money in markets for the wrap-up. So much happened in the markets this week, I thought it would be good if we touch base, so we're going to go ahead and do a money in markets. A couple of events coming up, a lunch with subscribers in Austin, Texas on the 22nd, and then following that, October 17th in Amsterdam, and then again April in New York with Richard Dolan, so we'll keep you posted. If you you can get tickets now for the Austin, Texas lunch. We ought to have the Amsterdam lunch up in a week or two. Our theme tonight is mark to market. And one of the reasons I wanted to talk about mark to market is when Greece and Puerto Rico both made very clear they could never pay the debt, that essentially what it causes is a mark-to-market where the market starts to reflect the actual cost of or the valuation of the debt, but it's going to ripple throughout the market. And so we've seen a world where high-yield bonds or low-credit bonds are not paying that much more than very high-credit bonds. Those spreads, the credit spreads, have narrowed. And now what you're going to see is differentiation, and those spreads are widening now as we speak, and it's happening throughout the markets. It's a form of accountability, and there's good news and there's bad news on it. The good news is that we can't start to make real change or reach real solutions unless you build in some kind of accountability into the system. So mark-to-market is good in the sense that it means markets can start to adjust and do transactions based on reality instead of on kick the can. The Greeks said no. They voted no. And there's a lot of meaning in that Greek referendum. It basically sends a signal that the general population understands that predatory lending is never going to get them anywhere. And so you have to deal with things at a much deeper level. We'll see what happens. Whether or not Greece stays in the EU or not is still not clear, and how this is going to sort out. So let's talk about money and markets, because the Greek situation was far from the only thing going on. In the last 3 weeks, Chinese stocks have dropped a great deal. They've essentially raised $3.3 trillion from the Chinese stock markets, although they bounced today, so it's down a little. That's about 14 times Greece's gross domestic product. So, which will show you that the Chinese stock market in some respects is a far bigger deal than Greece. What you're watching is a battle royale, and it is very much tied up in all the other things we're watching happen related to the Silk Road, road between the U.S., China, and Russia. Essentially, China has been doing a series of things that has very much threatened the position of the United States and G7. But anytime China gets together with Russia or with Europe, the problem grows greater. We saw China have a very enormous success with the Asian Infrastructure Investment Bank coming together and getting signed up recently. China's been lobbying heavily to get into the IMF SDR system. And then, of course, China's been doing a great number of things they can to establish themselves as an alternative to the gold market. And I think part of what you saw with the huge drop in Chinese stocks, the West and the Americans have been doing many things, I think, as they can to really create nervousness in that market. But whatever caused it, certainly you had a tremendous run-up in the Chinese market over the last year. It's still up for the year about 7%. It's now down. If you just look at the large cap stocks, they're down a little bit for the year now, having been up as much as 25%. So it's quite a swing. But the correction in China, and we've been correcting throughout the second quarter, but the last 9 days of the third quarter since June 30th have been quite, you know, it's easy to say so far this week what we've really had was a meltdown. Anyway, so I think what you're watching is significant politics back and forth. And frankly, the Americans won this round. They've gotten fast track through, which is really designed in the Pacific region and the Atlantic region. Those two trade agreements are, and the trade and services agreement, all three, the package of three, is really designed to outcompete China. And if you look at the steps that the Chinese had to take to really stem the fall in their markets, it's interesting. Sovereign Man put out an email today saying this was going to give the IMF the sort of justification they needed to keep the Chinese out of the SDR this fall, and that is a very possible scenario, because you did get quite a mess and quite an effort to make China look like it was really not at the level of the Western markets in terms of handling liquidity. But there's no doubt the U.S. is trying to protect its status as a reserve currency, whether it's attacking over the infrastructure bank, attacking over the SDR, attacking over the gold market. The U.S. is really out to make sure that it's boss. Now, the problem with all of this is whether it's the squabbling with Russia, the Russian sanctions, their impact on the European economy, the same with China. The more we engage in economic warfare, the harder it's going to be on the global economy. So, you know, at this point, the warfare is overwhelming sort of fundamental economics and growth, and that's part of what you're watching. Now, the Americans certainly had problems in their market, but rather than standing up and giving regulatory orders, they just declared a glitch on the New York Stock Exchange and closed the exchange down for several hours. Now, it didn't stop trading because orders were being routed through the NASDAQ and the dark pools, and it sort of makes you wonder if the U.S. is routing everything through the dark pools, really what's really going on electronically in those dark pools. Interestingly enough, at the same time, the Barclays CEO was thrown out and replaced by the chairman. Barclays is the lead bank in the U.K., and so you kind of wonder, given the squabbling going on between the G7 and China, what was the connection, if any? Big question mark. Let's just take a look at the market close today. But I wanted to point out, I tend to analyze markets based on Friday closes. And we started this week on Monday to post the charts on Friday close. We're going to be posting the ETFs I use to track the market, as well as various other things of interest. So take a look. You need to log in to see it. The title of the commentary was Money and Markets, July 5th, 2015, and we just posted several PDFs. It's a roundup of sort of charts that gives you an interesting take on the market, and I'm going to endeavor to do that and have that up by Monday morning so that you can look at the Friday close, because I think it's more important to look at the Friday close than the Thursday close. But let's just take a run and look how things are. U.S. dollar index is now up approximately 6% for the year. Given everything that's happened over the last week, if you want to conjecture that the Fed is going to raise interest rates this fall, when they do, again, it's really going to pull the leash on the emerging markets, including China. Anybody who's borrowed in dollars, and that's one of my concerns for the second half of this year, is if we get that bear trap in the U.S. dollar. Anyway, U.S. dollar now up 6% for the year, and given this week's developments, it's looking even stronger. The S&P flat, it's down about 0.37% for the year. The strong dog in the equity markets with China collapsing is the DAX, which is still up 12.6%. Obviously, it's come off. It was up over 25%. But Germany is still looking like the strong player at the table for the year. As I said, the large cap China which had been up over 25%, is now down almost 2% for the year. Year to date, for the last year, 12-month period, it's up almost 8%. And the A share is up, still up 9.36% for the year. small caps down for the year. The developed markets are still up 2.33%, so they've come down a lot, but they didn't melt down as much as China. Emerging markets are now down 4.5% for the year. The aggregate bond index now down 1.16%. The long 20-year treasury ETF down 6.35%. Commodities really got hit. Of course, the concern if the Chinese stock market is down this much, concern that China will slow down even more. We saw the CRB commodities index is now down 6% for the year. Oil's now down 16% for the year. Oil really took a dive. And gold and silver down now for the year, almost 2%. So it just flashed. Everything's flashing. Deflation, deflation, deflation. And, of course, that's what happens when you get the kind of severe economic warfare you're seeing between the United States, Russia, and Asia with Europe in the middle. There's selective buying opportunities, but we need to be careful because there's a lot of ugly politics between now and November. And, of course, certainly in the U.S. markets, we're way overdue for a correction. So if we get one, and summer's the time you know, that it's more likely than not to get one, you know, so it's not time, I think, to dive in, but we'll just have to see. But, you know, just think of this as a period when you're going to get opportunities. My vote is that what we're watching are corrections in a long-term bull market. It's not the end of the bull. That doesn't mean that all is well in the world. Remember, part of the slow burn is you can have the stock market going up while hideous things are going on the other side of the balance sheet. So just because corporate stocks are doing well doesn't mean people are doing well. So don't think I'm saying that things are hunky-dory, but I think if you look at the equity markets, there's a lot of money in the bond market that is going to have to shift out. Now, mark-to-market, of course, as we know, can crash equity markets. A bond mark-to-market can. But in this instance, everything still says to me that we're in a correction now. If you look at some of the things that could go on, if you get a full-blown war, you know, all wars can kill all bulls. That's how it works. Housing market keeps being reported as strong. The home builders are one of the sectors of the U.S. market that's doing the best. Big question now is with China experiencing what they did in the stock market, are the Chinese going to continue to be the biggest foreign buyers of U.S. housing? They've been a big player in the U.S. housing markets. The National Association of Realtors has reported that Chinese have spent $28.6 billion on properties in the United States. Everybody's always asking me, should I leave the country? You just need to know the Chinese are pouring in here. The more information this week out on the hack of the Office of Personnel Management at the White House. This hack is very, very serious, and I think we don't know what the truth of it is. If you look at the files that they've gotten, these are files that expose enormously confidential information about the people who run critical aspects of the government. I've been told from a couple of sources that included the intelligence officers. I'd always assumed that the intelligence agencies would make sure certain kinds of employees were not in databases like the OPM, but I don't know what the crossover is. Whatever it is, this is pretty dangerous. Now, it's not clear to me that it really was the Chinese. Who knows? For all I could know, it was the defense contractors saying it was the Chinese or trying to make sure that contracts don't get outsourced. So there's all sorts of potential games that could be going on here. But needless to say, it's a very serious breach. And I'm going to keep trying to figure out what really happened. If you see anything on it of interest, please send it my way. John Corzine, former chairman of the Goldman Sachs, former senator from New Jersey, settled the MF Global case for $65 million, along with a variety of other parties. To me, that's part of getting the Clinton scandals erased before the next year's election. For a variety of reasons, I ended up reading Clinton Cash, which is the latest book on the Clinton Foundation by a pretty serious investigative reporter. It turned out to be much better than I expected in the reviews up on the blog. I had no idea how I should have known what an ugly picture it is, but the Global Foundation racket is really a form of racketeering. It's pretty shocking. And, you know, but I think it pays to look at it for a variety of reasons. Anyway, check the commentary out on the blog. Latest sort of weekly poll from Rasmussen, this one just a poll of the readers. And when asked the question, is now the time to rewrite the American Constitution, 89.1 said no, which shows you Americans are smarter sometimes than you think, although I would anticipate the group coming into Rasmussen is much more from the conservative side and likely to say no on that one. Our hero this week is Asghar Shaheen, who is a scientist at Columbia University. Working with his graduate students and other colleagues, he's come up with a way to generate energy from evaporation. He's got a new work in Nature Communications, and we put up a little video a couple weeks ago on the blog. Obviously, there's water evaporating all over the world. If you can capture that and turn it into energy, what an incredible thing. I'd also like, in the hero category, to give a nod to Thomas Piketty, who's the French author who's got everybody intrigued with his work on economics and what causes inequality, for pointing out bravely in Europe that the Greek people forgave German debt at the end of World War I and World War II. And their moralizing at the Greeks was a little bit hypocritical. Anyway, very courageous, but great thing to do. Ask Catherine. We've got a lot of good questions tonight. Hello, Catherine. We greatly look forward to your report tonight. I must say that we know better, but our family is feeling the downward pull of concern, perhaps even some fear. And what's the use of all our work to build community and personal resiliency as the news continues to get stranger? Seems like everyone is very worried about the third quarter of this year, with predictions of crashes and personal freedom clampdowns coming from many corners. I know this kind of doom and gloom reporting has been going on for decades, but the ante keeps getting raised. California's just lost its right for personal exemptions to vaccinate. Oregon is beginning to implement Arago, a tracking device for cars. China's stock market plunging, Greece, the strange and confusing Jade Helm exercises, Fukushima, and the dying of the Pacific, etc. Many are suggesting that folks should either leave the U.S. before September or be prepared for serious business. We are coming to you once again for a sound and reasonable response, knowing that, of course, you cannot predict the future. What is your feeling about the vulnerability of the systems right now and imminent breakdown, planned or otherwise? Thank you so much. Okay, so I have a lot of different comments here, and one of the things I need to warn is I find very different circumstances for very different people. So I always have trouble generalizing about these kinds of situations. I can look at one person or one family and say, yes, you absolutely should not be here. You should be in place X, whereas others, absolutely, they'd be crazy to leave. So a lot of this breaks down to exactly where you are, what you're responsible for, what you do. A lot of it has to do with where are you going to be happier and where are you going to have more power, where you are or someplace else. And it's a fairly complex equation. So with that caveat, let's just talk about some of the things going on. I'm one of the people who thinks this is going to be a rough third quarter. Now, I tend to always think of the third quarter as rough, and I'll tell you why. Here's how decisions get made, and now I'm speaking for people who are in North America. Here's how decisions get made in the United States. The Congress, our economy very much runs off the federal budget. The federal budget is subject to an annual appropriation cycle. The Congress committees recommend appropriations before they leave for the summer recess. Then in late July or early August, the Bohemian Grove meets and makes the critical policy decisions that need to get made. That's communicated to the bureaucrats who have everything ready in September. When Congress comes back and finalizes the budget, it's supposed to be ready on October 1st, at which point people are very happy or disappointed, and that tends to get reflected in the markets in October. I'll never forget reading one article about October being the rutting season for deer. And sometimes when you're in Washington, that's what it feels like. It feels like a whole bunch of male deer sort of rutting and going at each other to kill each other for September and October. It's like a pig squeezing through a snake. And if things are going to get crazy sometimes, and then, of course, everybody's highly scheduled during that period as well. So, you know, when they come back with fresh physical energy from their summer vacation. So I always think when you have tremendous non-alignments, which we do, and of course you have the Greeks and the Puerto Ricans, and now it's going to be cascading around the world, people saying, okay, we need to achieve accountability. And of course, with the assets moved out of the 2.0 structures, the U.S. government being one of them, you have significantly more liabilities than you have assets, and all your assets are now over someplace else. And the question is, can you claw them back or claim them, et cetera, et cetera? So there's a lot of tension. There's a lot of decisions to be made and a lot to be reconciled, because we can't keep kicking the can. Accountability is here, starting with Greece and Puerto Rico, but it's going to roll out in many other places. So, yeah, I think it's a difficult time. And that's why I said, if you read the annual wrap-up, my concern is not collapse, because I think there's almost no chance of collapse unless there's something going on in terms of the planet geophysically that I don't know about, which is perfectly possible. The leadership's afraid of something. Maybe it's that. I don't know. So if there's something wrong with the electromagnetic field, if there's, you know, if sunspots are going to stop, who knows, you know, something like that could happen. But from a man-made standpoint, if we're not going to use markets to reconcile supply and demand, then we're going to have to use violence and physical and sort of political and physical control, which is what's happening. So that, you know, mark to market through the political process or through the federal budget is going to happen this year. It's got a couple more years to happen, unless we really radically accelerate change, which is possible. And then, of course, we have all these different things coming to a head, whether it's the talks in Iran, Ukraine, Greece, other problems in the European Union, and debt write-offs. So, and then, of course, there's the politics around the SDR system. So on top of all of that, the leadership is insecure, both globally and domestically. And they have a lot of reasons to be insecure based on everything I know. And that's not including all the different things I don't know. Now, if you look at the economics, the slow burn can easily hold, but it's going to require a lot more violence, a lot more force. And anyway, so I think collapse, I'm not worried about collapse on the right-hand side of the balance sheet. I'm worried about, you know, sort of meanness and totalitarianism on the left-hand side of the balance sheet. I'll give you a perfect example. I put up a link to Carl Denninger's latest comment on healthcare. He was talking about two businesses, one a surgical center in Oklahoma and two a Arizona test provider, who were able to provide services for 20 cents on the dollar compared to what you could do through Medicare if you just paid cash. And he was arguing, you know, if your deductible in Medicare is 20%, well, you might as well just leave Medicare and pay cash. But what he was arguing, and I think very rightly and fairly so, was how much the cost was pumped up as a result of the federal involvement and subsidization. And we're seeing that all across society. And, you know, obviously one of the things we can do to change is, in fact, just delete all that subsidy and get back to real fundamentals. The problem, of course, is you have a whole world of corporations who, and and publicly traded stocks who are pumped up with all that subsidy. And of course, it's creating millions of jobs. Although the jobs are scheduled to be sort of engineered out with digital technology, leaving the corporate profits in place. But these are all big reality checks that need to happen if you're going to get to jump the curve change. So I see collapse as highly unlikely. What I do see is more invasive control and more shenanigans of all different kinds. Another thing is the U.S. bear trap is likely, if the U.S. starts to raise interest rates, then the dollar could get much stronger, and that could cause a lot of crazy making in a lot of places. It's not just the Chinese who could get whacked hard. It's the whole emerging markets. Of course, if you do want to leave the country, it could make your dollar stronger for some period of time. Another big issue to worry about in the United States is health freedom. Obamacare is making the health system progressively less safe. And clearly there are many other places you can move to in the world that have much better healthcare systems, and much more trustworthy. And that includes getting away from vaccines. I think if you're the new California law is complex, but if ultimately you're going to be forced to allow them to vaccinate your children, now you're talking about letting the state use your children as guinea pig and basically, you know, alter their DNA in ways that we don't even begin to understand. It's very scary. Same with places with very heavy spraying or very heavy drought. I think the time is coming where you may have to say, you know, if I had children and I had no way of getting them out of the vaccines, I would leave California. Now, that's me. Other people have a different circumstance. We have a very good, in the archives, we have a very good interview with Dr. Laura Thompson about what to do if you have to take a vaccine and how to protect yourself. But if it were me, and the only way I could get my kids away from Common Core or vaccines was to leave California, I would do it. The other thing is, no matter where you are, the digital systems are going to get more invasive. They're certainly the most invasive, or one of the most invasive places is the United States. But remember, that's going to be everywhere, at least for the time being. And you really want to be very careful and make, sort of organize your life to be very careful when you use them, and to the extent you can avoid them, I think that's a very good idea. Throughout North America, we're seeing property taxes and governmental fees increasing. I specifically chose to live in a place that had exceedingly low property taxes because one of my great concerns was municipal taxes and fees were going to fly up tremendously. In some jurisdictions where you don't have a good sheriff or good enforcement leadership, you're seeing, you know, crazy civil money penalty fees and crazy things go on. So it's very important that you are in a quality jurisdiction, both sheriff, state, and local government. Again, one of the reasons I chose to live where I live is I live in a state that has very high quality state and local government. I have a great mayor. I live in a jurisdiction that has a great sheriff. That doesn't mean everything's perfect, but I think you really want to pay attention to the quality of your state and local leadership. It can make an enormous difference. If you're in an area that's got a very corrupt sheriff and corrupt enforcement and corrupt state and local government, absolutely you need to leave. But don't go to a strange country with more corrupt state and local government. You know, so don't. I think you have to be very, very careful and look at the things at a very granular level. For a couple of years, I've had people marketing to me the advantages of going to Puerto Rico so you didn't have to pay capital gains if you were managing money, et cetera, et cetera. Well, look at what's going on in Puerto Rico. I mean, you know, who knows what could happen there. So I think you just have to be very careful. One of the things I would say is that, and I've said this for many years, you should have a disaster recovery kit. You should have the food and provision you need to go for a certain period of time without the system. I don't expect that kind of trouble in the next in the fall in North America. But I've gone through the discipline of having to do it, particularly because I'm an investment advisor. And I think it's very good practice, because if you look at what's been going on around the world, whether it's the power outage in Kentucky or Katrina in New Orleans, you know, trouble comes, and it's not the big bang collapse everywhere, but it could come to your place. So I think you need to be capable of having planned out what you would do in the kind of disasters that are likely to happen where you live, and know what you're going to do and how you're going to handle it. My big concern for the coming 2 to 3 years is entrainment. If you have not listened to our interview with Adam Trombley on entrainment technology, then you need to do it. I was just talking with a subscriber this week and discovered that he had not heard it. And I just impressed upon him that he had to listen to it. The reality is that we are living in a world where all of us are subject to significant amount of manipulative media and manipulative programming. And I can engage in an hour of conjecture about what may or may not be going on. But the reality is, I know a lot of subscribers who are wonderful people, and they seem to be very immune to this kind of manipulation, and yet they live with family and friends who are not, who buy the, you know, who get sucked into the mind control hook, line, and sinker. And you need to understand that we're living in a world where we have, we are surrounded by people who are easily manipulated, and can look at things very, very differently. I just watched an absolutely dreadful movie called The Kingsman, in which you have a church, an entire church congregation who is manipulated by entrainment technology to kill each other. And, you know, it's a little bit like one of the zombie movies. And if you look at what I believe they have in terms of entrainment, don't think that that can't happen. It's pretty scary. So if you're interested and want to watch a really dreadful movie, check out Colin Firth and The Kingsman. I have a nomadic lifestyle. I have my home base in a rural area in Tennessee. But I learned a nomadic lifestyle when I was dealing with the litigation. And what happened was I lost complete confidence in the leadership. The only place where I didn't lose confidence was their ability to manipulate and buy off my family and friends. They have enormous power to hassle and inconvenience, and it taught me the power of being able to be free to just get up and go. And so I have designed my life to be very, very flexible, and to be able to do what I do in a whole variety of places, and to be happy doing it. So, because the most important thing about your lifestyle is, how can I have a free and inspired life? How can you have a free and inspired life? And so I came to the conclusion, whether because the leadership is deteriorating or the infrastructure is deteriorating or entrainment of my neighbors can really irritate me, better to be a nomad. Now that's my solution. I had a family friend who had survived the Holocaust. She'd managed to get some of her family out into London and then to the United States. And she then remarried a doctor in the United States, and they were very financially successful. But her entire life, she lived in a one-bedroom apartment with no possessions. And ever since the litigation, of course, I live an exceptionally modest lifestyle. And that's because I literally, you know, it's very much what happened to her. You know, I want to be free to lock the door and take off and not worry about it. So, but that's me. And of course, everybody's different. So, the one thing I do want to stress is if you do look overseas, do lots of due diligence, because many of the problems we're facing in North America are happening all around the world. And you also want to be very careful to go from a place where you're known and you have a good reputation and you have some amount of power to a place where you're a complete stranger and nobody knows who you are. So do lots of due diligence and check it out carefully, because I always keep saying there is no away. And in some respects, if you look at some of the things that could happen in the emerging markets because of if we do get a bear trap in the dollar, in many respects, I assure you there are wonderful places in the United States that will be far safer. Hi, Catherine. I was wondering what your thoughts were on this email from Jim Sinclair. When Greece voted no, Jim put out an email that I got. I'm on his list, where he talked about how dire things could be. I'm a great Jim Sinclair fan, but I always disagree with him about what's going to happen. He's got a very sort of focused view of a certain view of the future. And because I've spent so much time looking at the black budget, I think what's going on is far weirder and stranger. I would also say, given what's going on in India and China, what could happen with the rising interest rates, I think the chances of a significant drop in the value or the price of precious metals could absolutely happen. I'm very concerned that gold could drop down as low as 700. I'm not saying that that would happen, but it could. So my view of the future and possible scenarios is very different than Jim's. But I like him tremendously as a person, and I always enjoy hearing what he has to say. The other thing is, I just think it's a very bad idea to go to fear. And if you read a lot of stuff that encourages you to go to fear, then you're going to spend years and years and years and years and years in fear, because this has been going on for 20 years. And I just think we build the future. If you buy into, you know, the end of the world is coming and you need to be afraid and everything's terrible, then you never get anything done. So when you take a look at Jim's email, it falls into the category of fear porn. So I just don't like to go there. Dear Catherine, what happened to gold money? I just caught you saying something changed there and recommending taking one's holdings out, which is what I'm trying to do, et cetera, et cetera. What do you think of SPGMX in Singapore to replace gold money? I have a very high opinion of Singapore as a jurisdiction. I'm not familiar with SPGMX. Next week on the precious metals, our precious metals market report, we're going to have a wonderful economist and senior executive from ABC Bullion in Australia. That is an alternative, and we'll talk through some of the alternatives at ABC. There are other depositories in the United States. If you check out my article, Options for Storage in Precious Metals, I wrote with Carolyn Betts, we name some of the other options. There's Delaware Depository, there's CNT. There's also, if you haven't looked, check out Das Safe in Vienna. If you want to go abroad, now that is going to require a trip. But ABC Bullion in Australia, I think, is a reasonable alternative. What happened to gold money is if you look at the Turk family and some of the lead investors, they've pulled a significant amount of their capital out, merged the firm with Bitgold, which has about $30 million in capital, but that's at the parent level, not the subsidiary level. And so the leadership that had attracted me into gold money and recommending gold money has pulled their capital out. And I've recommended that the people who our subscribers and clients do the same. That's not to say and part of my concern is if you look at the squeeze going on in the precious metals market, I think there's a lot of argument that whatever you have in terms of precious metals, you need to assert a much stronger control. So you need it in a depository individually in your name, preferably in your own vault if you can, or you need to have control of it in a place that only you know. Dear Catherine, it appears to me the events leading up to the passage of the new mandatory vaccination law here in California were staged and planned in advance. That's my guess. I agree. Who knows what the truth is, but you know, from everything I saw, it looked very staged to me. So that's my guess. Dear Catherine, there's been so much anger directed towards people displaying the Confederate flag. What is your opinion? Was the true meaning and symbolism of the Confederate flag? Here's Squabbles about this is all designed to divide and conquer, so I'm not going to go there because I have no idea, nor am I going to research anything about the Confederate flag. I do think there's a real targeting of certain kinds of people who live in the South and have a certain value system, which is a very a highly ethical pro-Constitution sort of pro-Golden Rule, people who strongly believe in the Golden Rule and believe in the law. And part of this is a divide-and-conquer game on them. I talked about it when I talked about the Charleston shooting, or if you read my post on the Charleston shooting or a post about Obama going to the Charleston church. So I would read those if you want. But there's a big divide-and-conquer game, and it's basically designed to sort of allow the leadership to get away with a lot of the shenanigans they're getting away with, including the fast-track authority. Dear Catherine, in your interview with James Turk, you said, "We've created very invasive digital systems through phones and internet and TV, all sorts of other things." Then he describes running hits on people at an individual level. Can you expand on who these hitmen are, how they pick up equity with the scheme, and how they profit from other people's failure? If you look at our Planet Debt presentation, we took a portion. I went through and I created an example of a family and showed all the different ways that this individual economic hit was run on them. The digital systems are very important to doing that. And then we republished it on the blog under the title The New Economic Game of Life. And it's an example using a family going from being very prosperous to being broke. And it shows you kind of how the game worked. And it's designed to give you an example of how that works. So go read that blog post, The New Economic Game of Life. And if that doesn't accomplish, if that doesn't help you, just come back and ask another question and I'll make some more examples. Because it's this is something that would be wonderful if everybody could really get their minds around. And I think if you get your mind around this, then you really see a lot more about how to protect yourself. Okay, let's go to the movies. Our movie this week is fantastic. It's the three movies of the Worker trilogy. I talk about it a lot in our interview and discussion of infrastructure on the wrap-up, and so I won't belabor it here. It's three movies. The first is Page Eight. The second is Turks and Caicos, and the third is Salting the Battlefield. It's the story of a syndicate of New Jersey businessmen and investors who are grossly overbilling the CIA and then taking the money. They're overbilling the CIA in the process of building secret torture and rendition sites around the world, and then they're taking a portion of the padding that they're getting and providing kickbacks to the British Prime Minister, who's stockpiling the money in a global foundation that's going to be his thing to do in retirement. And it's very thinly veiled description of Tony Blair is what it looks like to me. Given the sort of racketeering by the Clinton Foundation, it's a very appropriate thing to be talking about now. I wanted to talk about it this week in connection with infrastructure because the problem, and it's a problem Mr. Global has, and it is a problem that all wealthy people in this world have, is if you're going to invest money in the real economy instead of piling it up in the phony baloney, parts of the bond market, then you're going to have to get a real yield, and you're going to have to get a real yield from real productivity. And you have to get a real productivity isn't going to happen unless you have great infrastructure. And if you're building rendition centers and torture centers and prisons instead of building great infrastructure, guess what's going to happen to your economy? Hello. So, it's back to fundamentals and accountability. And the Worker trilogy does an absolutely fantastic job of showing you the leadership problem, and the reality is all the wealthy lawyers you need to steal and lie and kill to do the financial coup d'etat is not the kind of people you need to run a real economy that can perform, particularly up against the Chinese, because I assure you the Chinese leadership is full of engineers who know how to build high-speed trains and bridges and tunnels and big buildings and lots of other stuff. And that's what they've been doing. They've been building high-speed trains while we've been busy, you know, piling up money in the bond market and stealing and killing. And, you know, that's not to say that we can't make great invisible weapons, because apparently we can. And then, of course, we don't have an interview. Our interview is the wrap-up and a discussion of infrastructure topic near and dear to my heart. One of the most shocking things that happened to me was when I started to speak publicly, one of the things I discovered was that whereas the world I grew up in, where infrastructure was a big, important, sexy, powerful topic, and the source, you know, he who built the great infrastructure projects and had the great infrastructure was very powerful. What I discovered is that most Americans thought infrastructure is a very stupid, boring topic. And that's what you get for living with years of, you know, sort of celebrity-soaked media. Anyway, this is part of the real power lines, and nothing has brought that home more than the Chinese creating the Asian Infrastructure Investment Bank, getting 57 members, including a lot of the leading countries in Europe, including the UK and Switzerland, and I suspect that's what they did, along with the entry into the SDR to get the, you know, whoever to crash the stock market. So hopefully the Chinese are making infrastructure sexy once again. If we had the tools to really see place-based economics, we would understand how powerful infrastructure is, because it's the way you get the real return is you create tremendous value on your regional and local economies. And that's what translates into real return on equity investment. The reality is, if we're going to stop building just rendition centers and prisons and start building great infrastructure again, and compete with the Chinese and everyone else on the merits, then we need a different kind of leadership, because lawyers are not the people to put together a vision of great infrastructure and make it happen. Not to say that I don't love lawyers, but there's nothing like a good one. Some good lawyers saved my life. But I think a legislature and an executive branch full of nothing but lawyers is you end up with rendition and centers instead of great suborbital platforms and high-speed trains. There's a reason China and Europe have better trains than we do. Okay, ladies and gentlemen, in closing, we have our precious metals market report next week with Jordan Alessio, who's the chief economist from ABC Bullion in Sydney, Australia. They've got offices across Australia and then one in Hong Kong. So we're going to have a lot to talk about, particularly in the Chinese market. The following week, we have a Solaria report with Cynthia McKinney. Cynthia McKinney was a congresswoman from Georgia. Fantastic woman. She'll be coming to us she's outside of the country now. And we're going to be talking about what the chief issues are going to be in the election and what she sees lying ahead. And then Solaria report with John Rappaport. I'm going to have the opportunity, in fact, next week to see Dr. Joseph Farrell. And I've asked him to do a recording with me on response to our infrastructure second quarter report. So we're going to be chewing that again with him, and I'm going to find a way to publish that sometime in the next month as well. So until next week with Jordan Alessio from ABC Bullion on precious metals, please remember, don't worry about whether or not there is a conspiracy. If you're not in a conspiracy, then you need to start one. Ladies and gentlemen, good night and good luck.